Welcome to Life After Corporate, your ultimate guide for making the leap from corporate leader to entrepreneur. I'm Deb Boulanger, entrepreneur, executive leader, and founder of the Launch Lab for Women Entrepreneurs. This is your time to break through the glass ceiling once and for all and get your ticket to the C-suite. Come back each week to get the leading strategies, advice, and tools that will give you the skills and confidence you need to replace your corporate paycheck. Are you ready? Let's go. Welcome to episode 7, Why I Hate Networking and Why You Should Too. A candid conversation with Kelly Hoey, author of the book, Build Your Dream Network. Kelly is a corporate escapee and, according to Forbes, one of the 5 women changing the world of VC and entrepreneurship. She's one of the 25 smartest women on Twitter by Fast Company and one of the 10 most connected people in New York City's tech scene by Inc. magazine. She's interviewed with Prime Minister of Aruba for a byline in the New York Times and dined with Malala. If you would have asked Kelly if she believed any of those accolades or opportunities would be used to highlight her career, she might have just said, "Are you kidding me?" The strategy she used to transform a predictable career into an unexpected one, including developing her networks, cultivating diverse professional relationships, and building a Yes to Me fund, will set you up to successfully take your own big, courageous leap of faith. She also has one of the hottest shoe collections in New York City. Welcome, Kelly Hoey.
Oh, I think I like that last part of the introduction best.
You have the sexiest shoes I have ever seen in New York, especially when you show up to do keynotes at prestigious women's networking events. They're really awesome.
Well, thank you. Well, I was going to say my uniform, my jeans, my white shirts. And, you know, if I'm going to jazz it up, it might as well be with the shoes.
It's gorgeous. Well, first, tell us about you. Tell us your story of making that courageous leap of faith. What brought you to writing the book, Build Your Dream Network, and sharing your practices with us as you really shifted made a huge career shift?
Yeah, I mean, my career was predictable. I was expected to get a graduate degree and get a job in an office. And so that's what I did as, you know, a Gen Xer. And I was a lawyer for 11 years. I then moved over onto the management side of the law firm. And that switch was, you know, kind of a seems like sort of an obvious one and an easy one. But at the time, back in 2002, it was a hard shift to make. And in making that shift, I really realized how important not just client development, those kind of deep relationships and that skill that I had really honed as an attorney, but the importance of having these broader networks, because the job I was looking for in management was really filled by a whispered network of who knew who, as opposed to job listings. And that was a sort of a pivotal moment, because then going forward, I was very intentional in ensuring that I didn't leave my career vulnerable by not having a diversity of networks. And it may be that there was networks I wasn't necessarily deep in, but that I, you know, had some kind of finger, you know, on the pulse and stayed in touch, even if I wasn't, you know, actively practicing law anymore. I've stayed in touch with client networks and on top of developments, just because, you know what, there might be an opportunity to help and kind of, you never know. And that kind of strategy of, you know, developing deep expertise networks and then not discarding networks and always ensuring that there was some kind of diversity, whether it is in geography or age or interest or gender, you know, whatever, fill in the blank. That's what's sort of catapulted and created future opportunities. So from law firm management, I became the first president of the global business networking group, 85 Broads, you know, now known as Elevate, but it was still owned by Janet Hansen, and I became her first president. And that was really where the kind of big leap of career faith, because I took that role and it was, you know, a 1-year contract, and it was for equity. It was not with a salary, and I was leaving a very good job with, you know, a paycheck in healthcare, as I like to jokingly say. And I was taking this big leap of career faith. And when I was really mulling it, you know, the things that had created my ability to take risk were, you know, having expertise and being known for something, having a network that saw a skill set that was marketable, and then having created, I want to say my Yes Me Fund, you know, being more interested in putting money in the bank. I should, you know, probably should have started the Yes Me Fund earlier. That would have, you know, in hindsight, that would have been the right thing. But rather than, you know, kind of advancing a lifestyle as it's so easy to do in a city like New York, rather than saying, what is it that I really need? And the ability to walk away, the ability to invest in your own future, the ability to pursue your dreams because, you know, your rent is covered, your bills are paid. That's hugely powerful. And that's something I really credit. I really credit my ex-husband in terms of a way, you know, he approached his finances. And that was a hugely valuable lesson for me in the 18 years that we were together, to sort of watch someone who had built their life that way and seeing how incredibly powerful that was, and not having your financial, you know, your finances and your ego weren't tied into having to get that paycheck or that bonus.
That's so important. And we talked about that in episode 2 of there's 3 different ways to go. You know, you can do your side hustle, you can test your big idea and leap. And if you can sock away enough money on the side and jump all in, it is the fastest path to the cash because you're 100% dedicated to it.
And ability to pursue things at the right pace and the way you want to do, not being beholden to the paycheck or the investor. So, you know, when I was mulling the big career change that was the like transformative and really it changed how I thought of myself and thought what was possible, it was really taking that role as the president of 85 Broads. Mm. So I had those other pieces in place. But the real kicker of why I made that leap, Deb, was someone said to me when I was sort of mulling it and not knowing what to do, they said, what's the worst thing that can happen, Kelly? And I'm looking at this person, it was someone I worked with at the law firm, and I'm like, you know, the worst thing that can happen, you know, it's rattling like it's a trick question. And the person looked at me and said, you could come back here and take your old job. And I think we all need to, like, really, when you're thinking about making that change, be realistic about what the worst case scenario is. And, you know, being homeless and, you know, selling Chiclets at the corner might be where our, you know, little Neanderthal pea brains go to. But really, what's the likelihood of that for most of us? What's the real likelihood? You know, I have a friend who's kind of miserable right now because she's basically, you know, between jobs and moved back home with her, you know, into an apartment that her parents own. And it's like right next to her on top of where her parents live. And she's kind of depressed about this. I'm like, whoa, if this is your worst case scenario, that's not so bad. Like, seriously, you got to put this stuff in perspective. Like, what's the worst case scenario? And when you realize that, it can be really freeing and really powerful in terms of like, oh, the worst thing for me is I go back into a, you know, a 8 to 7 p.m. job, you know, in a management role at, you know, a professional services firm. Is that my worst case scenario?
Yeah. And for some, and people actually do say that. I've had potential clients say to me, I'm afraid I'll live in a box under a bridge, or I'll burn through all my money and I'll be homeless. And, you know, you do want to be smart about it. You don't want to burn through all your cash, but the likelihood of that happening is so, so, so small. So I want to get back to, yes, there's fear, and the fear isn't real, and managing what's going on between your two ears is a really important piece of this journey. But you mentioned something before about whisper networks, and I have to tell you that I had never heard that term until recently. And tell us what whisper networks are, and tell us how you built your own whisper network or got beyond the whisper network to really curate a powerful community of people that helped you in making this leap from the law firm to 85 Broads. Who did you lean on? How did you reach out to them?
So, I mean, when I think, I mean, there's, let's just focus on Whisper Network in the positive sense, as opposed to, you know, Whisper Network of, you know, gossipy stuff or whatever. So in the positive sense, I mean, what, how are you, like, how are your networks and how are networks that you don't even know about you? Like, how are people talking about you when you're not in the room? You know, how are you conducting yourself in your day to day? How are you being helpful to other people? How are you performing on your job? You know, what's the product you're delivering? You know, are you the expert in your field? Have you made yourself the expert in your field? And do people know that? And how are they talking about you when you are not around? And that's what I think about when I think about the Whisper Network. And I think about it, you know, when jobs are filled by word of mouth. And, you know, you hear someone landed something. You're like, wow, how did they get that? You know, it's the stuff that's not advertised, right? Or the people who get promoted. And you're like, how'd they get promoted? You know, it's that the Whisper Network at work. You know, as in working. And so how do you get other people talking about you? So I realized when I made the lawyer to management career transition that these vacancies in the role I was seeking at that time, for the most part, were filled by people recommending other people. So I knew that I had to meet as many people already in those roles so that when there became a vacancy, my name was the one they thought of first. So that meant, you know, I got on a committee at the local bar association, and it was one that dealt with career development and attorney management because that was what I wanted to get into. So I could meet people in the profession that way. You know, I figured out the organizations they belonged to. I read the books that they were reading. I used, you know, contacts that I had for some initial introductions and kept, you know, meeting different people. Figured out the annual conference that they all went to, and I sent myself to it. You know, it's like my time, my dollar, you know, my investment in myself. And I went and did all of that. And lo and behold, it was, you know, kind of 18 months later, I landed that management role I'd been seeking because there was, you know, this sudden movement of someone leaving a job and there was a vacancy. And in that situation, you know, I was the first person that the hiring director thought of. And I went into the firm and interviewed. They did all the interviews in one day because they said, oh, can you talk to somebody else? And I'm like, yeah, sure, I can. So I was the only candidate they interviewed. And I interviewed over the course of like 6 hours in one day and landed the job. And I think, you know, that's where I'm like, okay, like figure out how the hiring happens and how you get your name kind of word of mouth. The role with 85 Broads, because it was not an advertised position, it had never existed before. And the reason Janet Hansen called me was my name kept coming up. And I had become really involved with 85 Broads in part so I could understand how this network worked, because at the time I was building an alumni program for a global law firm and I was given very few resources to do it, as in, you know, here's a cubicle and a paperclip kind of.
And no money.
No staff, no resources, no money. So it's like, how do I, where are there examples of voluntary membership organizations that run on the enthusiasm of the members? And how does that work? Because that's the only model that I could see. If I don't have dollars, you know, what can I do, right?
Right.
And so I went and became a member of 85 Broads. And I, like, if there was something members could do, we could blog, we could volunteer, we could show up. Like, if there was a tool that a member could use and be part of, I did it because of this research. But in doing so, in my hyperactivity, because I'd only been a member of 85 Broads for maybe, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 months, something like that. And Janet called me and sort of said, hey, I want to know more about you because people are talking about you.
So let's translate that too. So you're launching a business, you're making the leap from corporate to entrepreneur, and you're creating your network. And I love what you said, and there's so many parallels.
So let me pause. I hadn't even thought about doing anything entrepreneurial when Janet asked me to be the president. I hadn't even thought about it yet.
Oh, you were still at the law firm.
I was still at the law. I had never imagined myself being anything other than working in corporate my entire life. I thought, oh, maybe if I leave the law firm, I'll go work for an accounting firm and do the same.
So you were volunteering for 85 Broads and running that network while you were at the law firm. So when...
No, No. So I was an active member, and then it was 7 to 9 months in, Janet called me, and I'm still working at the law firm. And, you know, like I said, I'd never imagined leaving corporate world. And Janet called me and said, "Who are you? What do you do?" And I was describing my job and why I got involved with 85 Broads. And at the end of an hour-long phone call, she said to me, "Would you think about bringing what you do and know, would you think about bringing that to help me with 85 Broads? Would you think about coming on full time and I'll make you the first president?"
Wow.
So that's what, like, in terms of thinking about the Whisper Network, I mean, you know, Janet, the only reason I came to her attention wasn't like, I was like, "Hey, Janet, can I meet with you?" Like, you know, I wasn't like, "Hey, Janet, can I pick your brain over coffee?" It wasn't, I was just there and involved, and they're being helpful. They're being of service. I was there for my own self-interested reasons. I had a job to do and I needed some really good ideas that didn't cost a dime. And in the process, my knowledge, my know-how, my experience got in front of decision makers who were like, "Oh, we can do something with that. Here, come on over here."
You know, you talk about this in the book too, Build Your Dream Network. You mention give, 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 get. Yep. Right? And is that kind of the strategy that you used when you joined 85 Broads?
Yeah, but it was also, it was a totally get up front thing. I mean, think about it, Deb. I was really clear why I joined. I was like, I need an example. Like, you know, like, let me, what are possibilities out there where, I mean, and I was talking to people who were, you know, I'm going to say heading up the alumni programs for other firms, accounting firms, you know, McKinsey, like I was, you know, universities, I was looking at everything. And then I was like, hold on a minute here. Let me look at this one, because this is totally member driven. It's not supported by, you know, the initial members of 85 Broads came out of Goldman Sachs, but this is not a Goldman Sachs. This is not a whatever. This is a voluntary. Okay, how does, and they've got like three employees. How the hell does this work? I
mean, right.
Literally, I was like, all right, let me unpack this thing. But I didn't unpack it from the sidelines passively. I threw myself in wholeheartedly. And I think that's a big lesson for people. I mean, any of us can become members, you know, of an organization. And, you know, people often think, oh, I'll join and it'll produce magical things. It's like, hold on, it's not the organization. It's how you, you know, approach it and how you commit to it. And I was so committed that, you know, people talked about me. So how and where do you do this? But there was a whole lot of give when I was really getting, was really active in 85 Broads. But, you know, I initially joined with a big old get, like, I need to get some information.
You know, the give and the get is such a great balance, and it's a great equation to really adapt in your own life. So I'm part of Elevate. So next generation of 85 Broads was Elevate. And I remember being part of that network and getting a lot of clients through that network, because I would give content, I would give webinars, I would speak at events. And eventually I went to Christy Wallace and said, "We have a whole entrepreneur community here. And I know, because they're converting to be my clients, how about if I run the entrepreneur segment for New York City?" And it's a great way. So this is an example for our listeners, for if you're making a leap from, well, first of all, networks are important no matter whether you're in corporate or you're an entrepreneur. I think there's a level of importance that your network takes too, when you're relying on your network for referrals, when you're relying on your network to help you get things done. And it is a give and a get. And I find the more you give to your network, the more you get in return.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I would say it's sort of a funny line and kind of sort of get, saying this the right way so people understand, like, but have clarity on why you want to go in, right? Like, understanding, you know, this is a place where you do want to give a lot of your time, energy, resources, expertise, because you do hope, other than, you know, the helper's high, which people have studied that we all get from volunteering and mentoring and whatever, like, other than the helper's high or, you know, a line item on a resume, like, understand that, okay, there could be something valuable here. With 85 Broads, I had one goal, like, I need to get information.
Right.
And even if the information I received was, oh, okay, I see how this operates and this will never work in my scenario of building a corporate alumni program, great. That would have been helpful. Like, boom, or hey, this is a great model. fantastic. I've got the information I need to now build my alumni program. You know, I'm done. That would have been good too. This other was a really unexpected. It was sort of, as I sort of say to people, like, put yourself in front of serendipity. And in Janet offering me the opportunity of a lifetime, a transformative one for me in my career and how I thought about myself, that was like icing on the cake. I mean, you know, in many ways, I'd, you know, after the 7 to 9 months of the information I needed to do my job, I had that.
Right.
So this other thing was like, whoa, hold on here. Yeah.
So let's switch gears a little bit. I want to talk about why I hate networking and why you should too, because there's just so much bad behavior out there. So I thought of you a couple of months ago. I had walked into a conference for women entrepreneurs, and I walk into the room and there's about 600 women entrepreneurs in that room. And I thought to myself, how, as a needle in the haystack, am I supposed to meet the people that I am supposed to meet here today, either that can, you know, help me be seen and heard in a different way, or who might be ideal clients I'm supposed to work with. And I, at that moment, I said, oh my God, I hate networking. So give us the Kelly Hoey philosophy of how to build your network.
Yeah, because you've hit on it. You know, there's two different things. There's the sort of the noun and the verb. There's the activity, and then there is this entity that you want to have around you. I mean, most things around networking and most, you know, kind of guidance and stuff out there, I'm with you. I dislike the advice, and I'm not a huge fan of the activity as purely as an activity. I don't like to oversimplify. I like to be direct and clear when I give advice, but I don't like to oversimplify it, because what we're dealing with when you are building a network, building relationships, you know, networking, is you're dealing with other people. And we're squirrely weird creatures, right? Like, let's just, you know, like, what we want today is not necessarily what we want tomorrow. We change our minds. Like, we're weird, right?
Half of us are introverts and can't stand being in crowds.
Exactly. So, you know, this is why, for me, everything is about intentionality. And when you are intentional about what you want and where you think you need or know you need to get it, you can be intentional about how you ask other people for help. And at the end of the day, that intentionality, I think, makes you far more considerate, because at the end of the day, all we have is sort of relationships, our reputation, and time. And time's the one we can't get back. So how can you be more intentional? So when I think about the activity of networking, I go really micro. Like, I like to refer to it as micro networking. How are you showing up every day? How are you being helpful to the people that you interact with regularly? Like, the people who already know you and the people who have seen you in your work environment or volunteering or community service or whatever it may be, they're more likely to come to your aid or support or make introductions than a perfect stranger. And I don't think they're, you know, we're always looking for the perfect stranger who's, you know, the knight in shining armor who's going to, you know, rescue our heart and fund our business. And, you know, you fill in all the blanks on that kind of stuff. And, you know, no, like, more likely going to get that lead and introduction through somebody else. So I'd say to everyone, like, you know, when you're thinking about networking, think about, all right, what am I doing every day that is helping me build stronger connections and awareness of the people who are already in my network? And that can be everyone from family members to your neighbors, to the barista at the Starbucks you go to your personal trainer. Like, all of those people have the potential to unlock something that will help you in your career, your business. So how are you interacting and how are you treating them?
So it's interesting. So what I'm taking away from what you're saying is, how am I contributing to my network? Mm-hmm. And how am I supporting my network?
Right.
So in my Debism, it's, how am I being seen and heard today is number one. Where am I being seen and heard? How am I contributing to my network? But the next thing I do is look for people who I value, like you. Right. So I'll like something, comment on a post on LinkedIn, or retweet something that you've put out on Twitter, and really create relationships that way. And you have a great story. So let's take this to the online world, because I think we're going there naturally. And we all know random acts of really bad networking or really bad marketing. In fact, I got so aggravated, I'll say aggravated, last week when someone reached out to me, and she was probably really harmless, but invited me to some event. And I said, you don't even know me. You don't know that this is going to be of interest to me. Why are you sending me this random piece of information? And I didn't mean to single her out or come down hard on her, because I get half a dozen of these a day on LinkedIn. Oh, I'd love to connect with you for coffee. You know, and you say, never ask me for coffee. I mean, I responded to someone, if I had coffee with all the people who wanted to have coffee with me or connect with me on the phone, I would be out of business.
Right. Even if I was an eccentric, you know, billionaire, I would not be doing this as a way to fill my time. No, I would say the advice I give on that now, thanks to my dear friend, Joyce Sullivan, she now says when people reach out to that, she, you know, like puts on the sort of the sunshine face, and she's like, I'm intrigued. You know, why did you think that it would be useful to connect with me? Or I'm intrigued. What led you to believe that this would be a valuable, you know, event for me to attend? I'm interested in learning, you know, how you came to that conclusion. And she does this. She says, you know what? 75% of the time they don't respond back. But she's like, you know what? I'll just send it out that way. And she said, and the ones that do come back, she said, there may be people who just don't know how to reach out in an effective way. And so I'm like, damn, Joyce, that's great advice. Like, so that's what I would sort of offer up on that. But yes, those kind of weird, like, and you're like, what? Why'd you find me? And why did you think I'd be interested in? And exactly, like, you know, I don't even like coffee, but even if I did, like, seriously, like,
yeah,
how much of that could you sit around and do all day?
Exactly. And I think the other side of that is, and I'll tell you the final piece of the story of that big conference I went to, is I reach out to the conference organizer. I look them up, get to learn about them. What is their mission? What are they trying to accomplish with this event? And then I'll reach out and say, you know, our missions are in alignment, and I would love to contribute to what you're trying to accomplish. And then I get on stage, and I would rather connect with my audience that way and be able to give something of value and attract people into my circle who are interested in having that conversation.
Right. Well, I mean, some of these things with new organizations, this is where, you know what, and say it's your, whether it's a conference or an event, and you're showing up for the first time, you know, lean on, leverage the organizers. Because first of all, if they're not helpful, then that should tell you something about the organization, and it may not be an organization you want to contribute to. I remember the first time I went to an event, I was invited to be a guest at an event of 100 women in hedge funds. They made sure that I met people. They organizers made sure that I literally was like sort of like the sorority bump, like, oh, here, you know, the person who I first met, they were like, oh, I need to go talk to somebody else. Good. Let me hand off Kelly to somebody so that they can make introductions. And they did it without me asking. So you may have an organization that does that, right? So in some ways, like, you know, you want to test an organization, not by like, what's the quality of their membership? What's the quality of their leadership? And are they really welcoming? Are they really finding kind of the hidden ways to help people? Or are they kind of leaving Defender yourself and telling you there's an app and you're like, this is all just BS and it's not going to lead to anything? So sort of there's that, you know, dynamic. The other thing is, you know, as you said, getting on stage, that's not always possible for everybody. But the other piece of it is the idea that how can you be of help? How can you be of service? You know, is it delivering content? Or, you know, use an example pulled from Build Your Dream Network. You know, Jennifer Johnson, her case study in the book, I mean, she showed up and, you know, saw that they actually needed like physical help with the event. And so she said, would it be helpful to you if I took over the name tag table? And the organizers were like, yeah, like who wants that job? And, you know, they scurried off. Well, at the end of a, you know, an hour lunch where she knew no one, she had 84 new business leads now, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
Yeah, so, you know, that's one of those like, you know, it looks like a real menial task, but guess what? You know, you set up that name tag table so that you have to hand the name tag to everyone and introduce yourself. You know, you can turn a really meaningless or, you know, mundane task into something highly, highly useful and valuable. And there we go. There's ways to do it. And, you know, another example I would use from the book is, you know, sometimes when we're doing things in life, we've got to walk into, you know, I would say your conference with 600 women entrepreneurs, or, you know, the first time I went and walked into an 85 Broads, you know, power breakfast. I didn't know anyone. And, you know, there was 125 women having breakfast in the morning. And understand why you're walking in the room. Like, what is your goal? Is it curiosity? Is it to learn something? Is it to support a friend who's speaking? Like, what, why are you there? And understand that, okay, I know why I need to get him to come into this room and talk to strangers, but because I know why I'm here, you know, as opposed to, hey, so-and-so thought it was a good idea that I attend, then, you know, you can find ways to make it work. You know, the case study in the book I frequently refer people to is a guy by the name of Joe Styler, who knew that he needed to raise his profile within a particular industry. And that involved going to an annual conference every year in Vegas. And he is an introvert, like you, Deb.
Mm-hmm.
I would say he's probably more deeply an introvert than you portray to the world. But he knew, he's like, there is no way that I am ever going to be able to advance in my chosen profession, the one that he was networking to get into and building his knowledge base and relationships so that he would be top of mind when an opening came up in a particular department of the company he's working for. He's like, I have to do this. So I think there's that element of you're able to manage the queasiness, you're able to kind of manage the, like, why am I here and what am I doing? If you can anchor it in something that is meaningful to you, whether that is a career change, a promotion, whatever it may be.
Yeah, you don't get to the top in your fuzzy slippers.
Well, you might after you've built your network.
After you've built your network. And yes, I'm in my fuzzy slippers right now, but I had to get my hustle on and join some networks and some communities. And Elevate was one of those, and Luminary is another. And to really, I know women who network every night in New York City, and that exhausts me. Just the idea of that, I find completely exhausting. So what I do is just curate powerful communities. Where are the women who are going to lift me up, who I can really get to know, who I can support through my other connections? I think one of the things that gives me the greatest joy right now is expanding my network and sharing the great relationships I've cultivated over the last 12, 13, 14 years as an entrepreneur with my clients and with my colleagues, so that we can share trusted resources, because the ripple continues, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the most important things for women, because you're hitting on it, sort of this diversity of the network. So there's two types of networks. There's a narrow, deep network, which you think of closeness of relationships. You think about expertise. And there is, you know, there's probably, you know, industry. There's probably all sorts of things. But think of it like a narrow, deep network, right? Like, you know, who are people who've got your back? Who can you call at the last minute? How are you, you know, maybe it's a deep expertise in a very narrow field, like when I was practicing law and that kind of thing. And then the other network is a broad, shallow network. And that's the one where diversity comes in, because it may be that you do not have the same strength of personal relationship, but that network is filled up with, you know, people in different industries or geography and age, race, you know, sexual orientation, you name it, right? That's where that one, you know, kind of comes in. And you could see that you could have a relationship that at one point was very close that over the passage of time may fall into the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the difference between all my friends when I was in law school and where they are now. And that's where I'm such a, you know, a champion and proponent of how do you show up every day? Because, you know, according to studies, it's much easier to rekindle a former good relationship than build a new one. So, you know, if you were a jerk with your, you know, colleagues from two jobs ago, you know, good luck reaching out to them now, unless you were exceptional in your job and a jerk, then, you know, that exceptional part will override the jerk part. But anyway, you kind of get the point. But those are the two networks. Now, the broad, shallow network is typically associated with men. That's the type of network they build. And you think about, you know, men in your life that may not have close relationships to go to for problems. And you're like, oh, right. You know, the last, you know, I don't want to hear about their what XYZ one more time. Why don't they have a close friend to talk to about it? They built a network differently. Women typically have a narrow, deep network. You think of sometimes our hesitation as women to ask our friends, like real friends, not Facebook friends, real friends, for a business introduction. Or we hesitate to pitch a friend for their business, even though we know we are the best person for the job. Oh, I couldn't do that. It would destroy the friendship, right? So you see the two kind of structures of networks. The reality is you need both. Career strength and opportunity comes from having both. And increasingly studies, particularly with respect to women who are successful in their careers, that they have both of these networks. And they intentionally cultivate, in particular, that close inner network. And they ensure, there's a really interesting study out of Northwestern University, as I recall, that, you know, these women who were successful in these leadership programs not only had an inner network, like, you know, you talk about building your board of directors, your personal, you know, advisors. They had this inner network that was predominantly women. So think 4 to 7 women, okay? An inner network that was predominantly women and an inner network that had, each of them individually had diverse networks. And that's one of the things I talk a lot to women about now is like, you need to be intentional this way. This is not being Machiavellian. This is not being, you know, Dr. Evil. This is, you know, this is the structure that your career, your ambition needs to take it to the next level.
Absolutely. It's so important. I left the corporate world 12 years ago, but I still have deep connections from the people I spent 20 years with, right? So they're your family, and the guys and the women I worked with them are my biggest supporters now. So and important.
If you were a great person to work with 12 years ago, I mean, those people want to take your call. I mean, I have a note sitting in LinkedIn from a former colleague, and I'm just like, everything about the message is self-focused and heavy. And I was like, you were not a good, like, I don't recall you being the considerate, I'll make time for you, how can I help you, colleague, when we were working together in the corporate world. Why do you think I want to stop everything and have coffee with you now? Like, it's literally what I'm looking at, and I have yet to respond, and it's probably been 3 weeks. You know, how you show up, like greeting people, holding an elevator door, it may seem so trivial, but it's the kind of thing people remember, so that if you do reach out 12 years later, people are thrilled to hear from you.
Exactly. So lastly, you mentioned in Build Your Dream Network to pay attention on how others perceive you.
Mm-hmm.
What did you mean by that?
Well, it's sort of one of these things that you're making a new, you know, kind of new career and a new launch. And I really learned this when I dial it back to when I switched from being a lawyer into law firm management. The resume I needed to make that career change was not my lawyer resume. And I had to reframe how a network saw me, not as a corporate attorney billing 3,400 billable hours a year and, you know, the champion of pulling the all-nighters, but where was someone who managed, led, educated, mentored, recruited? Like, what was the skill set that the new job wanted? And so sometimes when people are like, oh, my network, you know, sees me this way, there is an element of, are you networking the wrong thing out there? You know, are you networking your old job when you're trying to do a new job? And how can you show your existing network that you are someone different? The other thing on paying attention to how your network perceives you is, instead of getting frustrated, you know, kind of by the questions they ask or the queries, to sort of step back and say, all right, is there something in this? Like, is it that I'm networking myself wrong? Or do they see something in me, my secret sauce, you know, whatever, that I hadn't managed before? So my personal example on that, former boss of mine from the law firm world, he said to me probably back in 2006, 2007, Deb, at this point, he said to me, Kelly, you need to tell people what you do. And I'm looking at him like, what do you mean? He said, the way you connect and network is really different. You need to tell people how you do that. They need to learn from you. And I looked at him and I told him he was the biggest idiot I'd ever. I told him this was the stupidest idea I'd ever heard of. And part of my reaction to tell him that he was an idiot was I did not realize what I did was special. I wasn't like, what do you mean? Everyone does it this way. And what do you mean this is different? And I was not ready to stop and say, hold on a minute here. Maybe I do something different. Maybe what comes so easily to me that I would almost look at people like they were, you know, idiots for not thinking of it. Like what is so obvious to me may be what is something that is my next career, my next business, my next possibility, my next promotion. So take a look at your, like what your network sees in you through those two filters, right? Are you networking the wrong thing? They see you as a lawyer when you're now an entrepreneur. Every once in a while, someone still does ping me on, hey, my friend wants to get a job in a law firm. Can you help? And my answer is no. It's been a long time since I've done law firm recruiting. So the answer would be no. But this other piece of this thing they ask you for, right, that you just, that comes so easily to you.
Comes so easily to you that you're not even paying attention to it. And that really is your secret sauce. And in some cases, and I think women especially have an underinflated view of the impact that they have on the people around them, that you really get to see your power in this way. So
this thing you brush off and devalue could be like the nugget that is your future. So go run with it. Ask people, say, you know, survey some people, say, what do I do well? Right?
Yeah.
Hey, you always come to ask me to do X for you. Why me? What is it? Like, what is it that you see in me that I can't see in myself?
Yeah. Or when someone says, oh my God, that was such a great presentation. Well, what was it about that? You know, what did you take away? What was the big aha for you? And really understanding that the power you have as an introvert, it never occurred to me in my prior life that I was a galvanizer of community. Mm-hmm. Never occurred to me until I decided to, because I wanted community and I didn't really know how to get community, I thought I can create it. I will create it around a need I see in the market, topics I think people are engaged with, and see who shows up. But I created community out of my need to have community.
Yeah, well, and you've read my book, so
yes.
You know the punchline that at the end of the day, I think introverts, people who are sensitive of their own needs, therefore, I think that translates into being sensitive to other people's needs. I think introverts make the best network builders. So there we go.
There we go. Kelly, any final words?
Oh, well, I think we've covered it all. And if your listeners don't think we have, well, I think the final word is you can invite me back anytime, Deb, because I absolutely love talking with you.
Oh, thank you so much. And everyone, please grab Build Your Dream Network. It is on the recommended reading list in the Launch Lab, required reading list in the Launch Lab for women who are restarting their careers as entrepreneurs. And Kelly, as always, such a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for making time with us today.
My absolute pleasure.
Thanks for listening, my friend. If you enjoyed this show, please head over to iTunes and subscribe and leave us a review. And be sure to hop over to the Life After Corporate Facebook group and join other growing entrepreneurs to get weekly tips on how to create more money and meaning doing work you love.